This podcast is sponsored by The Knowledge Website, a digital digest that cuts through the noise. Brought to you by the founder of The Week, John Connell. Every day, The Knowledge gives you all you need to know in just 5 minutes, delivered straight to your inbox or to your app. Sign up for free at theknowledge.com to get the most interesting ideas, the stories that matter, and the quirkiest anecdotes, all expertly curated.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and Kate Andrews. It's another day and the number of daily cases seems to have fallen yet again. Kate, what's the latest?
So the number of cases being reported daily is now falling. It looks like it may have hit its peak around 50, 55,000 cases about a week ago. And now we have something around 35,000 cases being reported daily. Now take the figures with a pinch of salt because these numbers are revised and often when they're revised, they go up. But it's unlikely it would be revised up by, you know, tens of thousands of cases. So on the whole, good news, and the graphs show it. You are now seeing that slight decline. This could be for a myriad of reasons. It could be that the virus has peaked, that the increased vaccinations are helping with that, certainly. It could be that people are changing their behavior, as we've seen, you know, so many more cases reported as it looked like the virus was going up exponentially. It might be that people decided to stay indoors, shield themselves, not wanting to get COVID. We're also suffering with pingdemic, the idea that if you are told to isolate by NHS Test and Trace, you must do so. I think it's like 600,000 people were asked to do so in the previous week. And so now people are weighing up whether activity is worthwhile. If you have a holiday coming up, you may not want to go out for dinner. And so you just, you know, there are lots of reasons that it could be going back down. And of course, we shouldn't get too excited because for all we know, you know, the virus continues to surprise us. Cases could surge again. We always knew there was going to be an exit wave. But I think what the dip does suggest is that the biggest moment for reopening and the virus surging wasn't actually the 19th of July, which once upon a time was going to be the 21st of June, but actually that reopening on the 17th of May, when people went back inside into indoor hospitality and the rest. The government has been very behind during the pandemic on proper messaging about how this virus spreads. It spreads inside in poorly ventilated spaces. So when people went back inside, it's not to say they were wrong to do so, certainly not, but that's when the virus was going to start going up. So I think a lot of what you saw in the most recent wave, and I don't want to overstate, it may well still be going, is that return to indoor activity. And that really did push the figures up.
So Katie, too early for definite celebrations yet?
Too early for definite celebrations, but clearly is going to give some comfort to number 10 after what's been quite a difficult week in terms of the messaging around lifting restrictions, in terms of their worries about lifting so many, the changes on nightclubs. I think that if you look at it, you know, we could be at the point where we are, as Kate says, you know, actually going to see a fall and continuing. But I think it's worth remembering that a few weeks ago it was the Euros, and that was, you know, lots of mixing, socialising, whether that's in the stadium, whether it's getting the tube back, or just having people around to watch the football, that there is, you know, a logical reason that rates would be going higher as a result of that. And we still got to see the effect of the reopening in terms of, you know, that coming through, because it won't be immediate.
And we have to remember that hospitalizations lag infection. So the fact that the daily number of cases being reported is the rate is falling, you know, hospitalizations are bound to go up before they go back down. But the good news here is that they remain roughly a quarter of what hospitalizations were when we didn't have vaccines and the infection rate was soaring. And again, you know, we can't be certain about anything, but if we have peaked from this wave and it's going back down, even though hospitalizations are bound to go up somewhat more, if it stays at a quarter of what it was, that would really suggest that the NHS is going to be able to handle this, these numbers. There may still be a very difficult winter ahead of us with all the other asks on the NHS. But, you know, that would be a really positive sign that actually the vaccines have made this something that we can manage and live with.
And Kate, something that we've been talking about on the podcast this week is about the pingdemic, as you've already mentioned, and whether or not key workers should be exempt from the test and trace scheme. And last night, the government did make some moves on that. Can you talk a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, so apparently there's now a framework that is going to allow key workers in certain sectors to be exempt from pingdemic. That is, if you are told that you must isolate, then you could have some kind of exception to that, and it would involve testing. But it would probably only mean that you could go to work. They wouldn't want you socializing with lots of people, but it would mean that you could go and do your job. And it doesn't apply to everyone. It's not a blanket exemption, they say, for every sector. The company has to get approved. It's very bureaucratic. The sectors that it includes are ones that you would think of as vital, medicines, transport. Here we've got emergency services, border control, local government. Let's find out if some local officials try to take advantage of that one. We'll see. But the point is that they really don't want everybody thinking it's available to them. That said, I mean, when the Prime Minister gave his Freedom Day press conference, I remember listening to the language. And if you didn't know the date, you really might have thought it was something out of his announcement in March 2020 to go back into lockdown. Mm. It was like, we will make sure that the food and the water and the electricity continues to run. And it's like, what? This is Freedom Day in Britain. Like, this is, well, in England, and, you know, Scotland's at level zero, but frankly, it's still hugely restricted in the rest of it. But, you know, it was really very odd language for something that was supposed to be Freedom Day. And it shows how defunct, really, this NHS test and trace system is in the age of vaccines. It was designed for a time where we thought that the way we live with this was to track the virus. It's designed for far fewer cases than what we have now. It was not designed because they ever thought that, well, because I don't think they were planning, hopefully, for 600,000 people to be sent into isolation. So their failure to reform that is something they're now having to deal with. And of course, it's being done in what seems like quite a bureaucratic way. It'll be very interesting to see which businesses actually get signed off. I imagine if you are a small to medium-sized business, this could prove a bit of a nightmare.
And Katie, Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak are around halfway through their self-isolation. Do you think once they come out, that will give them, you know, somewhat renewed impetus to reform the system?
Not particularly. I think in a way, because they are going through self-isolation, having briefly, and I'm putting that in quote marks, considered not isolating and taking part in a mysterious pilot scheme. They've been walking never to try and encourage others to do the same. And that is in large the reason why they U-turned. Now, the U-turn was also pressure and the fact that it was going to clearly blow up in their face. But I think the concern that you were hearing from figures in government is that if they didn't self-isolate, it'd be really hard to get other people to follow the rules in the coming weeks. And therefore, I think that it points to the fact that they don't think the rules are about to change and that they went through that. And I think particularly if you look at Sajid Javid and the fact that he is double jabbed and has tested positive for COVID now, which can happen. And I think that the vaccines are game changers in that they hopefully prevent serious illness. But I think it does make that mood music a bit harder for announcing saying, oh, the double jabbed, not having to isolate is going to be moved forward. And the health secretary would tell us that having had COVID from, self-isolation or once he's back. So I think it's here for some time to come. And it's interesting even, so there's one cabinet minister out today, George Eustace, who when pressed wouldn't completely confirm that by this August date, August 16, the double jab would definitely be exempt. Now, I think that is still the plan, but I think this is why the case numbers, if you think back to that, is very good news for the government, because the reason they are worried is because there just doesn't seem to be much left they can do. And they think self-isolation is that thing. So I would work on the assumption the rules will change next month. But if it was the case that cases started to climb again at a drastic rate, you can start to see some in government might start to make those arguments.
And because the Prime Minister and the Chancellor were in isolation this week, they've missed a week of Westminster resuming its party calendar, getting 2 years' worth in, it seems, this week. Katie, you've been on the front line doing journalistic work this week. What's that been like, going back to that social calendar?
Yeah, I've been doing my own events research programme. It's been tough work.
I really appreciated the invite.
Tell us about your week. Tell us about your week.
Well, I think this is the only week there could be parties in Westminster, because obviously MPs have gone home for the summer recess now. And I think there was an effort after various changes to press on. And it's been a question of, well, can people make it to the end of the week without being pinged? And what price is a party? How much do we value that party if it potentially risks 10 days in self-isolation? Mm-hmm. And I think on Monday, lots of people were asking whether actually politicians would really go to any of these. I think it's interesting because politicians have gone to quite a few. Obviously, the most politicians being at the Spectator Party.
Of course.
Which was yesterday. But we are seeing a sense in where you have cabinet ministers who are quite happy to be seen out. I do think from my research, people are more comfortable with an outdoor party than an indoor party. Attendance at both, but I think garden parties are where you will see the most politicians, because obviously in many ways it's on message, and JVT in that press conference this week when he's talking about socialising, I also been saying activity you want to do indoor, you can do it outdoor, do it. So socialising in the sun, luckily with the weather this week, somehow has come together.
Can I just say, as somebody who was alongside Katie for a few of the evenings this week, I really think the government should have had her design the events research programme because, witnessing what I did this week, she really knows her stuff, and we need to get experts. We need to get experts into government. That's my line, and backing Katie Balls.
Would you have similar observations about socialising this week, Kate, given your frontline role as well this week?
I'm not sure I was on the front line, to be honest. I think Katie, I don't want to take that away.
Independence Day party, wasn't there?
I don't want to take, you know, Katie's status away from her, diminish it in any way. I was a supporting role. Yes, I think so. What I was most heartened by was the fact that how easily people fall back into normal behavior. And obviously it's self-selecting, because if you are still very nervous, you're not going to go to these parties. But for those who did decide to come, it was so wonderful to be able to see people just fall back into it. You know, just that very human behavior of giving each other a hug and having a drink. It was delightful.
Katie and Kate, thanks for joining me from a very fresh-faced Friday at the Spectator offices. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow, where you will hear a rematch between Kate, yourself, and Fraser Nelson, our beloved editor, about whether or not you were right about June 21st. Is that right? Can you trail it for us?
I gotta be really careful here. Well, the reason the podcast is happening tomorrow is because there is a little dig at me on a podcast a few days ago when I wasn't in the office, where Fraser said he was vindicated and I demanded a right to reply. So I'm not going to do that to him. I'm going to take the high ground and just say, listen out tomorrow, and listeners can decide who was right.
So you can tune into that tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening, everyone.